If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What's up, Geek Ketchup listeners? Welcome to Season 2, Chapter 31. Before we get started, we wanted to take a moment to say thank you for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on social media, Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Links to all of these accounts are available on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even a link to our Patreon and PayPal pages if you'd like to support the show. Of course, if you already follow us and would like to help us spread the love for geekery, we ask that you leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform and share us with your friends and family. Today, we're joined by some truly terrific guests from the Atlanta-based geek rock band Hyperspace. To kick off this chapter, we're going to hit you with their first single, Jackie, off their latest album, Emulator.
Welcome back, Geek Ketchup family. We really hope you enjoyed the song Jackie that we let in with today, as we've definitely been rocking out to it and many of the other songs released by our awesome guest today. They are known as Hyperspace, a self-described geek rock and or nerd punk band out of Atlanta, Georgia that has a fantastic sound and fills their lyrics with loads of fun stuff from the world of geekery. Hyperspace is a trio consisting of lead singer, guitarist Jason Kochis, bassist Kayvon Sarakani, and drummer Ryan Paul. But today we've got Jason and Kayvon hanging out with us. So before we jump into things here, let's take a quick moment to introduce everybody so that our listeners can identify our voices. So let's start with the band's fearless frontman, Jason.
Hey, I'm Jason Kochis. I play guitar and sing in Hyperspace.
And we'll pass it over here to the groovy bass master, Kayvon.
Hey, I'm Kayvon Sarakani, and I play bass.
And of course, we've got everybody's favorite co-host, Kyle.
I don't know about favorite, but certainly a co-host.
Hey, you're my favorite.
There you go.
And of course, I'm Chris Heck. So we're going to have a ton of fun today. Get to know Jason and Kayvon here a little bit as we talk music and some other nerdy topics. But before we get into that, let's let Jason and Kayvon jump in and tell us a little bit about the band and where listeners can find you if they want to check you out.
We started Hyperspace back in 2011, Ryan and I. We're in Atlanta, Georgia, and we've been going ever since. We've had a couple different bass players. Kayvon's actually our third bass player.
Okay.
But yeah, we're coming up on 10 years this September.
Wow.
So we're pretty excited about that. And mostly you can find us on our website. It's hyperspaceband.com, and it's got links to all of our, where you can find our music, where you can purchase our music, social media accounts, all that kind of stuff. So that's the place to go.
Awesome. Anything to throw in there, Kayvon?
We're out there. We have a wide range of different outlets that you can catch our material. So
yeah, for sure. I know we were checking out your YouTube. I found the albums on iTunes. So definitely been nonstop listening to them. So you said y'all formed in 2011, Jason. And obviously it sounds like Kayvon came on a little bit later. But
right.
Did you and Ryan know each other beforehand, or was it just, boom, we're going to make a band?
Yeah, I was trying to get a band together. My former band, we played a lot of the same songs that from the early Hyperspace records. But, people were having families and changing jobs and things like that. So we couldn't get together. And I think I put an ad in Craigslist, or Ryan did. Somehow we connected on Craigslist. And, we went to dinner and just talked about what we wanted to do for the band. And, I already had demos, and he was able to listen to those, and he was on board, and we all had like similar crossover interests and similar influences. So it just sort of took off from there. And once he and I played the first time, I was like, yeah, definitely, he's the guy. Travis Barker over here doing his thing. And we found a bass player after that, and then I think was in like maybe a year or two later, we released our first album. So
that's pretty quick then.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So you said you guys all had like similar backgrounds as far as like genres that you liked and influences. So could you describe like what is geek rock and nerd punk, and how you settled on that genre? Because you guys are all definitely very talented musicians, but that seems like a very niche genre.
Yeah, for me, when I had the idea for the band, it was sort of like, Green Day playing Weezer songs was what I was shooting for.
Okay.
And I think that we've definitely morphed over time, a little bit away from that, a little bit close to it. It's just with each person that's in the band, they bring their own influences. I liked Green Day and Weezer, Nirvana, Superdrag, Matthew Sweet. So I had all that going on. And then, Ryan is definitely a lot more eclectic. He had some crossover in there, but he listened to like truer punk bands like your Rancid and NoFX and stuff like that. And again, Kayvon has more diverse influences than I do, but we all had a common thread of just the punk rock thing.
Yeah. So what bands are your favorites, Kayvon?
Well, I do like Rancid, as Jason mentioned about Ryan, but pretty much tons of the 70s punk bands, a lot of the bands off of Epitaph Records and Fat Records from the 90s, Pennywise, a lot of the hardcore bands from New York, like Sick of It All and Agnostic Front, pretty much, a wide range of metal bands too. So I like all kinds of different music. I think there's something valuable to be found in anything that pleases your ear.
Absolutely, right. I think that's kind of how Kyle and I grew up, and a lot of the bands you're naming, I think, were some of those big bands, the 90s. You were mentioned a little further back, but those 90s, 2000s, late 80s, that was kind of all in our wheelhouse as well, I think. But
yeah,
Kyle was the bigger punk fan, generally speaking, than I was.
Yeah, I was that classic, like, pop punk, Blink-182, like Weezer, Green Day, Sugar Cult, like that kind of Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah.
That was my jam in high school. I still go back to it every now and then these days where like I get away, I spread out and listen to a few different things. But every time I listen to that genre of music, I'm like, this is the glory days of me enjoying music.
That's awesome. I think Ryan is really into Sugar Cult right now.
Yeah, he is.
He's loving them. Like, he sort of went back and rediscovered them, and he was like, I love them. He's always talking about them. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still around, but I will say when I first listened to Emulator, your all's newest album, when you had first reached out, like, those were the bands I kept coming back to. Like, it was this weird sense of like, I'm rocking out. I was really enjoying it. And then there's some funny moments with some of the lyrics you all have that are just entertaining, especially if you are really into geekery and everything like that. But I just kept having these weird senses of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Even though you all were new to me, and as the album was going through, and I was just like, man, I was like, these sound like a lot of bands that are in my CD binder that I don't dig out very often anymore, but just loved, you know, for years there for a while. So it was really cool, but also a little bit different experience as a listener.
Yeah, I mean, I tell Ryan and Jason frequently that I think a lot of the material, especially off the new one, could have been found in the 90s off of, you know, pretty much any of the pop punk labels back then. So
yeah, y'all, it's awesome. It's right on with that tone, that sound. I've been absolutely rocking out. Like, and what I like about you all too, and I don't know if Kyle, you've had these similar feelings, but like, I find myself throughout the course of an entire song, I'm rocking out to Jason's riffs and lyrics, and then I'll like get really into your bass line. Like, man, you have really, really groovy bass lines.
Thank you.
And then, like you said, I don't know if Travis Barker specifically came to mind for me with Ryan, but you can tell he is pounding them drums.
Yes. Just
getting it, you know, really fast pace. So it's hard to listen to you all and not just get pumped and really kind of energetic. Like, it comes through, I feel.
We certainly appreciate it, and we love that you love it. So,
yeah, you're very kind. Very kind.
Kyle, anything to add there?
No, it's right on par there. Like I said, listening to it took me back. I'm like, man, this is me. And like early 2000s, we were in high school. So I'm like, you know, this takes me back to high school, driving to school. Chris was talking about taking it back to the CD binder. I'm like, yep. Like right in the back of the old 94 Saturn, driving to high school, like just jamming out. It's all right there. And it just,
that's awesome.
Just instantly brings me back.
Yeah, this particular record, Emulator, I mean, it has many meanings. I mean, Ryan sort of had the idea of when we were writing some of these songs, our previous bass player, he became too busy and he had to leave the band. But, you know, it was just Ryan and I just writing songs or just messing around, you know, waiting for the, our other guy to show up. And the songs just sort of came out of that. And Ryan sort of challenged me in a way. He's like, hey, make this song longer, or, you know, let's add another chorus, or let's do this thing kind of like this band over here. So it was a lot of thinking about bands that we liked and that influenced us that we were trying to sort of emulate in a way, you know, like there were definitely songs that we told Sean, the guy who was recording us, hey, we want it to sound like this. And then we were mixing it with a guy named Saw in the UK. We're like, hey, we want this song to sound like this band.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it was very deliberate. And so when it came time for the CD cover, you know, somebody threw out the Nintendo cartridge idea, and I was like, that's cool. You know, it took me a while to get it together, but, you know, it definitely worked because we all grew up playing, you know, old school Nintendo games. I think Kayvon and Ryan were playing like PC games like Leisure Suit Larry and shit like that, you know, old Sierra games, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it all made sense. So the inside of the album, which I can show it to you, the viewers at home can't see it, but, you know, each page is like, we tried to make it look like a different, like, 8-bit video game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jason did all of this, by the way. He is a fantastic artist.
Oh, that's nice.
That's sweet. You got Brick Breaker, and that is awesome.
But yeah, I mean, so it was all about sort of emulating influences and, you know, just stuff that we liked a lot. And I was kind of nervous when we were putting the songs together because I thought it sounded different. It didn't sound like, you know, the original Hyperspace or whatever, but it's,
sure,
you know, it's just sort of evolving and becoming what we are and who the guys in the band are now.
Yeah, I think you can definitely tell listening back through your albums, you know, Going Plaid and Delusions of Grandeur and all of that. Like, there is a progression that you all can distinctly hear. But I'm really think it's interesting to hear about that's the explanation behind the emulator title. And I have to say again, I think you kind of hit it on the head, because if that was the case, I mean, it did it to me at least, you know, because like, I was sitting there going, man, this sounds like these other bands that I've always loved.
It definitely, it gives each song like its own unique feel. You know, and some, I think sometimes songs can end up sounding the same in a particular genre. And like you look back and you're thinking of the older Blink-182 stuff, like one song, you're like, oh, what's that song? And then you name the wrong one. But you definitely cannot do that here. Like, each song is distinct in its own right and stands by itself. It's really cool.
So you mentioned talking about, you know, going back and playing old Nintendo and things like that. You know, was it just your love for those types of things that really was like, I want to turn this into music? So I'm going to circle back kind of to that first part of Kyle's question about, you know, how you settled in on that with the geek rock or nerd punk, whichever way you want to call it.
Oh, in terms of like just the band vibe and everything, or the album?
Kind of in general, right? Because it seems like, you know, obviously Emulators has got some of those influences, but even going back to the beginning of the music, it seems like you've always kind of played in that realm or that genre with your lyrics and everything like that and the songwriting.
Yeah, it's a number of things. It's I like pop music, first of all, you know, and I always try to make the song sound poppy or whatever, but still not be too nice in some general way. But yeah, two songs come to mind that really sealed it was In the Garage by Weezer, when they were singing about like Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler and Kiss posters and things like that. I was like, wow, we can do that. We can sing about like nerdy things in songs. And then I discovered, it was like a year or two later, I discovered a band called Nerf Herder. They did the Buffy theme song for the TV show.
Oh, okay.
But they're great band. And, you know, their logo was the Star Wars font. And I was like, oh my God, you can do that? Like, you can get away with that? And, you know, one of their first hits was a song called Van Halen. And they were just singing about their love of Van Halen and
okay.
How Sammy Hagar kind of sucked and Dave was better. And I was like, I want to make music like this. And yeah. Then I guess third, there was a band in Atlanta called Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had a song called Droids, but basically the chorus was, we're not the droids you're looking for. And I was like, we could do that? Okay, that's what I want to do. So that's what I've been trying to do for 20 years or whatever, however long I've been trying to do this. But
no, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet. Is it along the similar path that you guys settled on the inspiration behind the name Hyperspace?
Oh, gosh.
Like with the Star Wars influences?
Yeah, I wanted to call it something Star Wars related. I wanted people to get it, you know, right from the get-go. But, I mean, we had pages and pages of names. I can't remember what they all were. But Hyperspace fit the bill. Like, I think we talked about, like, Docking Bay 94. There were so many references, like R5-D4, you know, just like anything. But Hyperspace just seemed like everyone's like, yeah, that sounds good enough. And I think it sounds also vague enough, you know, like if we wanted to turn into hippie music, we could do that, you know, because it's yeah. it's got that vibe.
That's true.
I think there's actually a group in the UK that's called Hyperspace, and they're like kind of like a techno band. So
okay,
you know, we could go that way if we wanted.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, why not?
Everybody was into EDM at least for a little while.
Right,
already.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I say, and I know Chris and I can certainly relate when it comes to picking a name for something. You draw up a big list, you take a look at it, and one starts to just randomly stick out to you for no reason. And it becomes a placeholder and ultimately becomes the final name.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, and if anybody's seen our stuff, I mean, you know, like, I don't think most people can mistake the font that we use. Just to go along with what you were saying, we kind of did the same thing, and it's straight up 90s X-Men. You know?
Sweet. Sweet. Love it.
From the cartoon. So, It's the funnest way to go when it comes to things in the world of geekery. And I think that's pretty cool just to hear kind of a similar background, but different mediums, like you all taking it with music. Kyle and I went more the way of obviously the podcast, but sounds like a similar type journey.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we don't let anybody come on our show without asking them this question. And we do talk about all things geek here. So I want to take us a little bit of a different direction, and then I imagine we'll maybe circle back and talk a little bit more music or band stuff. But we ask everybody when they come on, you know, what have you been geeking out on lately? Or essentially, what have you been spending lots of your free time doing with hobbies, you know, whatever it may be. So no wrong answers, you know, anything, video games, movies, wrestling, comics, whatever. If you hear our intro, you know that's what we're into. So I'll throw it to you, Kayvon, first. What you been geeking out on lately?
Well, obviously Mandalorian would be a big one. Pretty much haven't really been geeking out on too many sci-fi type of shows or anything. Maybe Discovery. I was catching up on Star Trek Discovery. But, you know, I've been spending time working on like a indie game, like a kind of like a graphical text adventure type thing. So kind of working on that. And I've always been into computers. So, you know, I try to work on little projects with my daughter when I can, robot kits and stuff like that.
Very cool.
Oh, nice. Like Lego Mindstorm type stuff?
No. More like there's one that just came out recently called Clickbot. And you can kind of add the pieces together in different ways, but you can actually program it too. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gives you a lot of freedom to teach like the basics too.
Oh, yeah.
Programmers and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, what's the game going to be about, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I'm working on two, actually, in tandem, because it's kind of following the same design, but one of us going to be hyperspace-based, you know, kind of like somewhat related to the comic book that Jason had put out about the band. So it'll be kind of funny. And then another one's also kind of like escaping a space station type thing.
Okay, that's super cool. And what about you, Jason? What have you been geeking out on lately?
You know, I've been obsessed with these two graphic novels I got in called X-Men Elsewhere. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's actually I have them right here. It's John Byrne continuing his run after Dark Phoenix.
Oh, nice. Wow.
It is amazing. It's insane. I love John Byrne. And yeah, I mean, he's doing this as fan fiction too. He's not getting paid. Marvel didn't want it, but he's like, you know what? I'm going to do 300 pages because that's what I do. So yeah, I've been nerding out over that. And then musically, yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Asian disco from like the 70s, which is, I don't know how I got there. I don't know. But one day I was like, I need something new, and this is it. I guess it's more, they call it a city pop is what they're calling it. But
okay.
There's one song that really sums it up. It's called Plastic Love. I don't know who the artist is, but it's, yeah, I've been in that kind of mood lately.
Asian pop? Or no, what'd you say? Asian disco.
I searched Asian disco, but now it's sort of turned into this genre called city pop.
City pop. Okay. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, Plastic Love, Asian disco. If you just Google that in YouTube, it's pretty cool.
Now you know I'm going to have to go look that up now.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's tight. It's tight.
2-hour rabbit hole later.
Or that may have been how you got there. I just say YouTube rabbit holes and things like that, just right. Never ending.
Well, when I was doing some work and I was just like, opened up YouTube and just typed Asian disco, and then there's just a playlist and it just keeps playing songs, you know, one after the other. And so that just stopped on this one song and I was like, who is this? What is this? So
people are going to listen to this and then Google results, search results for Asian disco are going to go up like 50%.
I hope so. I hope so.
You're going to be the viral catalyst.
Yeah, I know. we're going to start doing some Asian disco in hyperspace.
So are you a big X-Men fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Favorite X-Men?
Oh, God.
Put you on the spot?
I can give you I can give you three.
Okay.
Jean Grey, Scott Summers, and Wolverine.
Well, you got Kyle over here who's a huge Cyclops fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There needs to be more Scott Summers love in the world because homeboy gets hated on.
I mean, I like him up to a point. Up to a point.
Right.
You know, I'm selective with my fandom, with most fandoms, actually. But, yeah, particularly Scott, there's, you know, during the Dark Phoenix saga, that's Scott Summers to me.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit after that, he's still, but, you know, at some point he fell off for me, but.
Yeah, I mean, he gets a lot of hate from the X-Men community and things like that. But I always defend him usually the same way. I'm like, you know what? He got a lot put on his shoulders at the age of 16. And we don't know how you would respond to that.
Yes, I agree with that.
So Jean Grey's an interesting one, though. I don't think you often hear people say that she is someone's favorite X-Men. So is there a specific reason?
I mean, I just love Dark Phoenix saga and just the whole story of her sort of becoming corrupt and then sort of sacrificing herself. And I know it wasn't quote her or whatever, but you know, it's just, I've that whole dynamic between Scott and Jean is really what I like. You know, it's a soap opera. I hate to admit it, but I fall for that sort of soap opera. I watch a lot of Asian dramas, you know, on YouTube or Netflix, you know, so and again, it's like this person wants to be with that person, but they can't because of this over here and that over there. So it's
the eternal struggle.
Yeah. But at the end of the day too, I mean, Jean's powers are great. I think most of the time she's written really well. I think it was X-Men Red recently. I thought that she was right on with that. Like they resurrected her and then she was Jean Grey again. She wasn't, you know, this other thing over here, or, you know, that author over there. But
yeah, they did a really good job in X-Men Red of kind of bringing her back to the front. And then Marvel did a bit of a reset with the House of X Powers of 10 stuff, which I know Chris and I really enjoyed, but it was a tough time for a couple of those characters that were really starting to get going. How did you feel about the movie representation of Jean Grey?
I mean,
either one, I guess.
Personally, I haven't seen Jean Grey on screen that I liked. I mean, I liked the original three movies, the original two movies. Not X-Men United or whatever that third one was.
Last Stand or
something. No, it wasn't United. Yeah. The Last Stand, yeah. Ooh. I mean, she's the closest, but I don't think you can do the characters justice in like one or two movies, like the Dark Phoenix movie. Just you can't do it because it's an epic. It's got to be 15 movies or a television series or something like that. You know, you just can't do it in one 3-hour, 2-hour movie. It just doesn't work.
Sure.
Yeah.
But Kayvon, what about you? X-Men fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But not so much into Jean Grey. More of a Wolverine fan, but I like a lot of the villains, you know. I kind of like Magneto and Sabretooth. I like those kind of backstories where it's just a lot more in-depth. You know, everybody likes Wolverine. He's cool, but, you know, the bad guys are interesting to me, so.
You're a man after my own heart, buddy. Kyle will tell you, I'm a villain guy.
Awesome.
I was nervous. I didn't know how he was going to respond, and I was like, please don't say Gambit. Please don't say Gambit.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
No love for Gambit?
No. Have you all seen the Pete Holmes skit where he does the X-Men or whatever?
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's something to Google on YouTube. It's called The X-Men by Pete Holmes. And basically it's Professor X firing each member of the X-Men. And when he just rakes them over the coals every time. And when he gets the Gambit, I'll laugh even now. Even if I've seen it a million times, I love it so much because I loathe Gambit so much.
Ooh, well, this is Awkward.
I'm sorry.
I don't know if you've seen our logo.
I'm very controversial with my fandoms at times, so.
I think this interview is done now.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. Our logo, I am a caricature that's been turned into Gambit.
Mm. Oh.
And I'm Fat Wolverine. Yeah,
I'm having some audio trouble over here. No, it's totally cool. It's just, I never really got into this character. That's all.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
There's so many of them, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
There's no way. I mean, there's a few, right, that stand up and everybody kind of likes. But at this point, there's like thousands of X-Men.
Lots of really obscure, you know, that you don't see often. But yeah.
Yeah. Magneto, you said Sabretooth.
Yeah.
Omega Red.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
All those kinds of guys. You can't have a good hero without a good villain.
Exactly.
That's my thing.
Exactly.
Absolutely true. Well, I guess we'll loop back into music here a little bit. So we're living in this COVID world right now, and we saw that you guys performed at Dragon Con 2020, but it was all virtual.
Right.
So I was going to get your feelings and vibe on what it was like to work with the folks at Dragon Con and then also to perform virtually and how you guys do that together.
I was really pumped that they asked us again. You know, we actually performed there, I can't remember the year, maybe, God, it's like 6-7 years ago. We actually performed in, you know, in one of the ballrooms, which was amazing. So to be asked again was like, wow, this is incredible. And fortunately, we were able to perform virtually because we practiced through this app called Jamkazam. And so we recorded our video and our audio, and then I just sort of mixed it all together, kind of like what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And just send them the video, and then they were able to broadcast it, you know, like it wasn't truly live at the time.
Oh, okay.
But it was pre-recorded, but it was us performing the songs virtually. So
I was wondering, because I think we watched the performance and you had video cuts to each of you.
Right.
And so I was wondering, I was like, is this working like Zoom where it just pops up, you know, whoever's making the most noise or talking? But then I was like, with a musician or with music and everybody playing at the same time, I was like, it would probably be driving that nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it just had to be edited together. So,
yeah, that was very cool, you know, even to have the opportunity to still be able to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of crazy. So you talk about Jamkazam. So when you all practice like that, does it allow you then to actually play more just straight up live together? Like, hey, we're going to hit this song, you know, Darth Vader, and we're just going to run into it. And then it's almost like you all are in the same room.
Yeah, definitely. It's gotten a lot better. It used to be a free app, but now you have to pay. But when we moved over to the paid account, you know, they had different tiers. So we were unsure which one to choose, you know, wondering if the latency was going to be, you know, tier based or not. But so far it's been great. I mean,
yeah, there was a lot of trial and error to get it to a point where it was usable. But once we did, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Is there a lot of competition for an app like that?
There are some of them out there, but I don't know if they're quite on the same level. Not yet, but who knows?
Yeah, that seems like something, like a modern problem,
right?
Type deal that, you know, if more companies get around to and can develop something that works really well, that could, I don't know. Well, you guys tell me if you feel like that could change your industry.
I mean, I definitely think it could be, an interesting addition to it. Like, I've mentioned before to the guys that, you know, with all the VR headsets that we have nowadays, you know, maybe there's a future in that. You know, maybe somebody can't join a concert halfway across the world, but they can put on the headset and participate. And I think that'd be really cool.
I think you might be onto something right there. Especially as VR takes off more and more. But those things are pretty wild and immersive. I don't know if you've ever used like an Oculus.
Oh, yeah.
They're crazy once you get into them. A close buddy of mine keeps begging me to buy one and I haven't, but I'm like, I'll come play yours anytime you want. But that would be cool. I think that's something You should jump on, man. If you're a tech guy, you might have a billion-dollar idea there. Cause you know, and everybody goes through that, right? Oh, this amazing festival everybody's playing, or Burning Man, or some of those Coachella that are like epic size, legendary, world-renowned type things. They could still sell you a $50 or $100 ticket.
Right.
Couldn't see why not, too. I'm thinking of the Oculus commercial where they're at the courtside of an NBA game. I don't see anything different there. And
yeah, really, really isn't.
I'm sure there'd be people out there that would almost prefer it because you'd be able to get that front row seat and, you know, along with it, not have to be 50 rows deep or back in the pavilion area.
Yeah. And, you know, to be perfectly, you know, honest, you know, when I go to shows these days, you know, I'm older and I don't want to get knocked around and beaten up in the pit and stuff anymore. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess I'm a bit of an old geezer, but you know, hey.
Nah, I think, seems like we're all probably similar in age. So I think I can totally relate to that.
So, moving along here with all like the nerd topics and in your creative process for writing songs, do you find yourself, you talked about with Emulator, you know, getting inspiration from a specific band. What comes first in that creative process? Is it let's find a nerd topic and write a song, or is it let's get inspiration from the instrumentals and then weave in the nerd stuff?
For me, it usually has to start with like a guitar riff or something, or maybe it's just a lyric line. And like when I wrote Winnie Cooper, God, back in 2001 or whatever, I was like on the bus and I just wrote down Winnie Cooper, You're So Super. 7 years later, I pulled it out and I was like, oh, I could probably make a song out of that. And then I just made it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say more recently, and Kayvon can speak to this as well, it's been just, we're working on the music, the riff, the arrangement. And then I'll just sing something over it, or maybe, you know, somebody will say, hey, why don't you say this? Or that reminds me of Fugazi, or that reminds me of this band over here. So then it'll like give me an idea to sort of make the lyrics about that. And then other times it's just, you know, I'll just come out with something and it'll, you know, be Darth Vader or whatever. it just all happens all at one time. But more recently, I would say the ideas have been sort of developing, and you know, we sort of play around with the arrangements.
I imagine it's a little bit, I don't know if easier is the word because it's all relative, right? But maybe it's a little bit easier when with fandoms and geekery and things. You know, a lot of times that ties very close to our hearts and minds just naturally. You know, whether it's those relationships that you've forged with the X-Men over the years of reading them or watching a favorite character in a movie. So do you find that maybe that really helps you when you're coming up with stuff, or like you were saying, you might just try things out, like it's just kind of naturally able to come out of you from that standpoint?
It just depends, really. Like, you know, I've been trying to write a song about Jean Grey for years, but it just hasn't happened. I'm too close to it, you know?
But, okay. Yeah.
Sometimes it all just happens. Like there's a song called The Ghost of Carrie Fisher on Emulator, and you know, coworker of mine was just like, he said something to me about The Ghost of Carrie Fisher. So I went home later and I was just practicing, and I was like, just to be fun, I was like, hey, The Ghost of Carrie Fisher. And it just worked. I was like, whoa, well, that happened. And then I just kept going with it. So it, again, the inspiration and the spark for the songs come out of nowhere. Actually, Kayvon wrote the song Do or Do Not, which is
okay,
obviously about Master Yoda. But you know, he could talk to his process on that one.
For me, I mean, the music usually comes first. You know, I'll work on a particular riff, and then I'll hum something along with it. And you know, maybe something fits and something doesn't fit. And I just kind of like to follow the process of letting the song go in the direction that it wants to go.
Sure. Yeah.
for I don't know really how to put it other ways, but. Yeah, I mean, like Jason said, I mean, certain things might fit and they might work, but you just kind of have to see, you know, where the song wants to go. I mean, our inspiration's always going to be there, and it's always going to find its way into music regardless, so.
Well, I totally relate, like, that's how the creative process almost, some should say, should go. Mm-hmm. In that if you'll pigeonhole yourself if you're so desperate to write a song right. about Jean Grey versus, hey, if I just want to let this flow naturally and it takes me in a new direction, that's awesome. Like to hear that's kind of how they take shape, that there's no set plan up front and it's all take it where the music leads you.
Exactly.
So they say.
Exactly.
That's a soundbite right there. I want to hear that in the commercial.
Make a note of that, Kyle.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
So I have to ask, since we're talking songs, and this is kind of a controversial topic, but who wrote Episode 7?
Guilty.
Awesome. So that song cracked me the fuck up. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I was wondering if we could curse.
Absolutely. This is our show. We do what we want.
All right.
No, but that song got me when I first heard it. And Kyle knows that I have very interesting feelings on Star Wars right now in Episode 7. But
grab my cup of tea and sit back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I love how, you know, Episode 7, please don't suck. Right? Like, I think that's how everybody kind of felt at the beginning. But I wanted to see, did you all feel that it did suck? Or did you like it once it came out?
Well, I'll just interject real quick. I think Jason should have made it Episode 8.
Okay.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I wrote that about the wrong movie, obviously. In retrospect, I wrote it about the wrong movie.
Not a big fan of the Rian Johnson?
No. I like his other work. I just don't like that one.
Yeah.
The movie for me is, it looks amazing. It's beautiful. But I just have a problem with how they treated one of the characters. You all knew who I'm talking about. And that's all I can really say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no hype level for his potential trilogy?
Are they still doing that?
They just confirmed it's still a thing.
Really?
It's going to be a little bit.
Yeah.
Just recently, like a tweet or something came out and said he's working on other stuff at the moment, but it's still on.
I mean, if he does it something outside of the Skywalker family and makes it kind of, God, I mean, there's a ton of material out there that, you know, you could use. It doesn't have to be that, you know, he could do the Thrawn trilogy or the Yuuzhan Vong or something like that, you know, pretty much anything from the comics and the expanded universe, as long as he stays the hell away from the established stuff, you know?
Yeah.
See, it's funny, and this is where I'll come in, because I hated Episode 7 for the most part, to be honest. So I'll drop that bomb.
It was a rehash of New Hope, kind of. It really was.
Yeah, like my whole thing is, like, I want more. Like, to your point, Kayvon, there is so much material in the Star Wars universe is endless.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm just over Death Stars. I'm over Skywalkers, you know. And so it kind of went back. But looked great. It was a fun movie. You know, there was nothing wrong there. But storyline and stuff, it didn't do it for me. And I actually, this might be crazy to you all, but I actually liked Episode 8 the most out of all of them. But I don't think it had anything to do with Johnson versus, like, JJ or any of that kind of stuff. I just...
Right.
It was almost like the Empire thing, like that. It just, for whatever reason, I locked in on that one out of the three, and that's what it did for me.
A lot of people like that he took risk with it and didn't play it safe, and I get that, too.
Yeah, a little bit more.
Speaking, because I know Chris so well, it breaks the traditional Star Wars mold.
Right.
And I know that that's what Chris has liked all over the years.
Well, and what we're seeing in Mandalorian, like you mentioned, you recently watched The Mandalorian, right? So, and Jason, are you up to speed on that?
Yeah, I'm fully caught up. I don't know if you are, Kayvon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so no spoilers here, right? But that was a perfect example to me, was you still had a lot of familiar to it, but it wasn't just like placating or doing nostalgia for the purpose of nostalgia. You know?
Right.
It just felt more thought through, and we were getting fresh looks on places like Tatooine and the Krayt Dragon and that kind of stuff. Like, we've heard about it for 40 years. We've seen Tatooine a million times, but as we go to a totally different port and get more depth with the sand people, and it was just done differently.
Yeah. And, you know, I really like, they didn't feel the need to, you know, copy anything. They drew inspiration, what looks like to me, from Lone Wolf and Cub, you know, an old Japanese, manga, with the, you know, the lone warrior with the child that he's protecting, you know, it's very Lone Wolf and Cub. Mm. And
Yeah.
It's like a Western in space, really. So.
Yep. That's how I've described Mandalorian time and time again, that it's just, I love Westerns.
Yeah.
And so by extension, I typically like samurai stories as well. Like the Magnificent Seven and the, and all that. It's all just the rehash of the same story.
Exactly.
So Mandalorian just hit right at home as, like you said, a Western in space with all those same themes and tropes. And I really like that episode by episode. It's almost tells that you come to a new town, you fix their problem, and then you move on to the next town and fix their problem. It was,
yeah,
just really cool to see. Are you guys excited about the expanded universe coming out of Mandalorian? Like you talked about really wanting to see General Thrawn on live action. It looks like he might come into play in the Ahsoka series.
Yeah, I'd love to see where they can go with it. I don't know what they're going to do with some of the characters. I think of, what was it, the lady that played Cara Dune, she's been fired.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how they're going to fix it, but yeah, I'm very curious to see where they're going to go with everything.
We're just going to get more Carl Weathers.
I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
Or what's his name? Griff MacArthur or something? I always forget his name.
Carl Weathers.
The show itself.
Carl Weathers.
Yeah, that's all I call him is Carl Weathers.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So obviously there's like a ton of Star Wars influences in your music, but some of your albums kind of hit all over the place as far as fandom. So we have to ask if you could do a dedicated album to one specific fandom, whether it be Star Wars, Star Trek, X-Men, which one, I guess we'll go to Jason first here. Like if you could do a dedicated one, which one would it be or where would it come from?
Hmm. I mean, it'd probably have to be Star Wars at this point. I mean, I feel like we've done that already. Maybe not like a complete album of just Star Wars songs. But yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest influence or subject matter I could probably easily write about or, you know, would be very comfortable working within. Sometimes I find it hard to create a song if you tell me like what to write about.
Yeah,
it's I have to sort of get to it on my own or, you know, just be inspired by like maybe just a suggestion, not like a write me a grand, you know, Admiral Thrawn song tomorrow. You know, I need 3 minutes on Thrawn. You know, I can't do that as much.
Kayvon, how about you if you could develop an entire album?
That's difficult to say. I mean, Star Wars is obviously a big one, but I would probably go in a different direction. I would probably, I'll show my age here. There's a really old Sierra Online game called Space Quest that I loved, and it's an old computer game. They made a series of it. It was all comedic, and they themselves drew upon Trek and Star Wars and everything in all the games, so I'd kind of like to see like maybe a little mini album or something based on that, or to put another spin on it, maybe kind of do what Green Day did with American Idiot, and maybe do something like with the Apollo program. That'd be kind of cool.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
That'd be very different.
Yeah, I could see how like sitting hearing your creative process and kind of letting it flow, deciding on one of these would be difficult. So I guess it'd be more like a let a song come to you and then put it on the back burner. Right. And like, I'm going to wait until I can fill an entire album of this fandom.
Exactly.
So I have to say another song that really got me from your all's albums was the Darth Vader song. And so I was curious who wrote that one.
Yeah, I wrote that one too.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Those ones just, it cracked me up with that song, especially leading off that album. And it just strikes me, I don't know if anybody's told you this, all I can think about when I listen to that song is a montage, like a 1990s sitcom intro montage of like a 10-year-old Darth Vader just causing havoc and just rocking out to this song. Because I don't know, it's just got this vibe and the way you talk about like, I want to be Darth Vader. You know, it's all that goes through my head. So I don't know if you have a music video for it, but I would certainly be into that.
Wow, that's hilarious. No, we don't have a video for that one, unfortunately. Which usually what happens with hyperspace is we have the best intentions, but somehow the video comes out way after we release the album, which is probably going to happen with Emulator as well. But actually, we were sort of planning to film a video, and the weekend that we were going to film was the weekend that everyone went into quarantine. So, but yeah, no, Darth Vader. Yeah, God, I wrote that long time ago, and it was just like, again, I was at that point where I was like, I just want to write punk rock, you know, Star Wars songs, and I hadn't heard anyone do it yet, and so I thought it was, you know, sort of original. And then when I heard Grand Moff Tarkin do it, I was like, oh, cool, we can do this now. But also, I had a song before that called Commander Riker.
Okay.
And it was like Commander Riker, but he was being lusted after by, oh God, what was that guy's name? Barkley. I'm getting deep. I'm getting deep with Next Gen here. But yeah, so Barkley was lusting after Riker, and he was mad at Deanna Troi. And that was written around the time that I wrote Darth Vader. But
well, now you know you've got to do that,
right? Yeah.
What, the song?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I sounds like a hit. I recorded it. I was in an all-girl punk band in college, and like we would wear dresses and everything and drag, and so that was one of our songs, was Commander Riker. It was like the beginning was sang in falsetto. It was like, Commander Riker, you're the one for me. With your big brown beard and your phaser gun. And then it got to a point where it's like, you know, it turned into the Green Day, like, Commander Riker, you're the one for me. You know, just obnoxious, terrible stuff. But that's where Darth Vader came from.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Kyle's more the Star Trek guy. Like, I definitely have nothing against it by any means, but just never got quite as into it as Star Wars. But
yeah,
I'm sure Kyle would be down for a Commander Riker song.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd hope that you reference the way he steps over chairs and whatnot.
You know, it was I was too close that I didn't know that was a thing until more recently. But then once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And yeah. The chair thing definitely. Maybe when I revisit that, maybe I'll have to bring that back. But
yeah. So this is the silliest follow up. Riker with a beard or no beard?
He definitely had the beard. Definitely the lyric was with your big brown beard.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And your phaser gun. Yeah. Yeah. He had to have the beard. He looks weird without the beard.
Yeah. Man. It's like, well, he drops like 15 years. Yeah. He turns into baby faced.
Yeah.
So have you watched the new, was it Picard?
Yeah.
Jean-Luc?
Yep.
Yeah.
How was that? Did it live up to the Star Trek hype?
First episode was amazing. Really strong start. I think in the middle it sort of lagged, but I mean, overall it was fine. It was definitely Captain Picard, you know, which I was glad to see.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool for me to see kind of like a proper send-off to Data, you know, kind of at the end. But
spoilers.
Yeah, sorry.
I asked. It's okay.
I wasn't thrilled with, you know, how the last episode went, but I liked parts of it. I just think that they just went in a very, very different direction than, you know, what Starfleet and the Federation is supposed to be. And so, yeah, I mean, it was cool, but it was different.
Yeah, that's my main Star Trek inspiration comes from my mother, who's a huge Star Trek fan, and that was her one complaint. She was so frustrated by what they did with Starfleet. She's like, it's just not Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not the way it's supposed to be, and she's just very, very unhappy about it.
Like how they were sort of became corrupt, or at least parts of them?
Yeah, like the ideals of Starfleet, yeah, that sort of thing.
Because wasn't there a Next Gen episode where like all the Starfleet commanders got replaced and then they were like eating worms and stuff like that?
There was something like that, yeah. But it was more like, I think there was like a takeover. It was almost like, you know, a Body Snatchers type thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So is it safe to say you guys are Next Gen guys or have a preferred series?
I like pretty much all of them except Voyager. And I'm not crazy about Enterprise. It was okay, but... For me, I definitely like Next Gen the most. I love the original, and I like DS9 too. So,
yeah, I can agree with all of what you said there. I watched a little bit of Voyager. I hadn't seen any Enterprise, but yeah, I think you can like all of it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, I know there's a whole internet thing. You're either Voyager or DS9. It's like, no, there's room for all. You can enjoy both. It's okay.
When isn't there another new Star Trek show out?
Yeah, it's Discovery. Yeah.
Discovery. Okay.
I did not like how it started off at all, but I really warmed up to it, as it went on, and I really like it now.
That's good. Okay. I haven't caught any of the recent Star Trek stuff. The movies were pretty good, so I caught those, but I think most of my Star Trek time was still back 90s, 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, when it was still on TV with the card and everything like that.
Coming over to my house and my mom just having it on.
That is true, yes. Very often, Kyle's mom would just have it on. Probably, I think she had all the VHSs and DVDs too, yep. Right?
Oh, yep. Yeah.
She sounds like a great parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just wonderful, yeah. Wonderful.
It just reminds me of, I was watching this video on YouTube the other night. It was Blink-182 watching teenagers reacting to Blink-182. And like all the...
So meta.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. But all the kids were like, oh, my dad plays their songs all the time in the car. Or my mom listens to Blink-182. So it's just very interesting. It just reminded me of that, like how our parents pass on their fandoms.
And, yeah, for sure.
In a good way. In a good way, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely, get those legacy inspirations. I think Chris and I, we were just talking about D&D characters.
Yep,
and keeping the books and being able to kind of like pass them on to the next generation. Maybe making a legacy character, or this being like, these are the adventures we went on when they get into it, or making your kid play the original NES games before they're allowed to get a PlayStation.
Got to teach them the history.
It's awesome.
Now you brought up D&D, Kyle. So are you all D&D guys?
Oh yeah.
I've actually never played, but my girlfriend plays it. And, you know, I mean, I guess I've never played like a tabletop. Like I've played like Final Fantasy and,
right,
you know, like Dragon Warrior and things like that, which is like, you know, what I imagine it's like.
Yeah. I only asked because Kyle and I were in your boat, Jason, where, you know, 35 years go by and we had never played actual D&D. Until just this past week.
No way.
Wow. Yeah.
So we've got a buddy that's just been really getting into it and wanted to start dungeon mastering. And we were like, you know what? We'll jump in. We'll try it out. You know, always been playing RPGs, Final Fantasy, Zelda, you know, the whole nine yards, go down the list, which pretty much are just video game versions of D&D. And
yep.
And so we had our first... little adventure on Friday night.
Awesome.
So that was a
sweet
experience.
It was pretty cool. We always say somewhere in an alternate universe, we as kids, we got into it. But for whatever reason in this time continuum, in this universe, like we didn't. It just missed us.
Yeah.
So actually, and along those same lines, is there anything, Jason, you said that it's something you've always circled but never got into? So Kayvon, is there any fandoms that you feel like you would have been into but didn't get into?
Oh boy. Gosh, putting me on the spot now.
Yeah.
These are the serious questions. These,
yeah. Hard hitting questions.
I'm not sure. I tend to like a lot of different things, and you know, there's a lot of like games like World of Warcraft, you know, I played the beta of it, you know, before it was released, and I liked it, but I didn't really get into it after that.
Yeah.
And it blew up, right? There was, what's that other one? EverQuest. I never really got into that, and that was a huge one. So I would say it's probably more along the lines of video games, that there's a ton of them that I just never really gravitated towards, but...
Well, some of those need, like, your entire attention.
Yeah.
You know? If you're going to do World of Warcraft right, like, it's almost like you only play World of Warcraft.
Right.
What about you, Jason? Anything multiverse? Earth 3 Jason is into?
Mirror Jason?
I mean, yeah. I mean, other than, like, D&D or, you know, maybe, like... this is going to date me too, but when Nintendo 64 came out, I was like, no, I'm out. I can't do this. It just looks like crap. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So there's probably an alternate version of me that like loves Mario 64 and, you know, GoldenEye and all that stuff. But yeah, just for me, I was so into the 8-bit that when they brought in this 3D polygon thing, I couldn't do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of that either.
That's interesting.
You know, my son gets on me all the time. He's like, why didn't you play this? Why didn't you? And I just didn't like how it looked. Like I was, you know, I went to art school, so I was all about visuals, you know? And so to see that, it turned me off.
So no Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask?
Oh, I haven't played any of that stuff.
Wow. Can't get everything. And now they're putting everything on the new stuff. So it's like you almost ever want to go back. And, you know,
yeah,
we've got more options than we ever did.
Yeah, you know, the Switch updates of them are great. But
yeah.
There does seem to be a bit of a divide between 2D and 3D Mario fans. And it looks like Nintendo's starting to figure that out and actually come out with alternating series to fit both fan bases.
I mean, Paper Mario was kind of a nice throwback to the old style, but keeping it modern.
Yeah.
I liked new Super Mario Brothers. I mean, that was out on the Wii or whatever, but, you know, they brought it to the Wii U and the Switch.
Yeah.
Like, I can play that, but it's, you know, I like the side scroll more than the open world running around.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, that's what I was thinking, like the Super Mario Deluxe versus Galaxy. Or Odyssey, where it is that 3D environment, you're throwing the hat. Chris has been on me since day one of my Switch to buy Odyssey, and I just haven't.
I mean, it's pretty sweet.
I will say that I love the music and the sound design in, like, all the Mario Galaxy and Ocarina of Time, all of that. I mean, beautiful, beautiful sound design.
Yeah, it was definitely total package games that I think really is what added up to them being so beloved. Got to really nitpick to find things that you don't like when it comes to some of that stuff. The only reason why I get on you about Odyssey, Kyle, is because it's a ton of fun, but to both of your points, it has a lot of mixtures. So you'll be playing and you'll be running through in a very 3D modern world, and then you'll jump into a tube and you come out the other side and it's like it's 1985 all over again. And you're doing side-scrolling with 8-bit or 16-bit graphics, and so you just... It was almost like this bit of a homage to like the whole history versus one or the other.
And I'm caught up on the dinosaur, like charging around and breaking up blocks and whatnot.
Well, super cool. I know we're getting here probably close to the end of our time. Do you want to recap where folks can find you if they're wanting to check you all out and check your music out?
Sure. Yeah. Hyperspaceband.com. That's got links to, you know, our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. It also has links to all of our records, you know, that's on Spotify, iTunes, Bandcamp, Amazon, you know, all the places you can get music where you should be able to find us. Again, you might have to look and make sure it's us and not some UK band, but, you know, we've been trying to weed out, you know, the missed links.
If it doesn't sound like Asian disco, you'll be okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually think I saw Beck's latest album is called Hyperspace.
Oddly enough, we almost called the album Beck just to cause confusion, but we thought we would get sued, so we went with the safe route.
That's funny. That's good.
We danced this line of getting in trouble for either song titles or, you know,
content,
things like that. Yeah, the content is difficult at times.
Yeah, I think we can feel your pain on that one.
Constant tiptoe with copyright folks. You're like,
yeah. Any last words, Kayvon?
Just that. Thank you very much for having us and for allowing us to spend the time going over all of this. We love that you like it, and We hope to be able to put out some more for you.
I'll definitely have my eyes open for it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for picking our brain about all our nerdy things. And hopefully I didn't make any enemies today.
Nah, no way. Hopefully you'll gain some listeners, because I know that I've already been promoting to other friends that I know that have been asking me what I've been listening to lately and stuff like that. So you all are permanently in my playlist. That's for sure.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Anything to wrap up from you, Kyle?
No, I just thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate it and chatting some geekery with us. It's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
A huge thank you to Jason and Kayvon from Hyperspace for joining us. We all hope that you enjoyed this chapter as we got to know the guys and a little more about Nerdpunk. Definitely go check out Hyperspace on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube, Bandcamp, SoundCloud, or Amazon Music. We'll close out today's chapter with another song from their album Emulator. This one is D&D.
Michael plays D&D with Demagogue and Stranger Things. She's got everything I need.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Catch-Up every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Catch-Up Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Catch-Up Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.